And welcome to this special intro to episode 18 of the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by Aaron Varola. And Aaron, we're doing this because the day after we recorded our episode, some pretty major news broke that Henry Cavill may not be Superman anymore in the DCEU or the DCU or whatever you want to call it. And it's not official, but the internet basically broke today.
I mean, literally, somebody said to me, Henry Cavill managed to break the internet more by not being Superman more than he ever has being Superman, which is such a poignant statement there. But woke up this morning, I think it was probably like 9:30 a.m. Eastern time, and Boris Kitt of The Hollywood Reporter had an exclusive story that it appears that Henry Cavill was out as the role of Superman. And literally set the world ablaze. And lots of people weighing in, lots of commentary from all types of people. Vanity Fair did a piece. There are now all these crazy rumors happening about his potential replacements. And personally, I was shocked and heartbroken, if I'm being completely honest with you, because I think, you know, there have been not many bright spots in the, and this is just my opinion, in the, you know, DC universe or DCU. And but Henry Cavill, and, you know, aside from Gal Gadot, were some of those bright spots. And it was just a shame to think that he, you know, he may not be in the role anymore.
Yeah.
What do you think?
That was my initial reaction, was like, well, that sucks. But, you know, I wish that we would have gotten that elusive Man of Steel sequel, like the true Man of Steel sequel, where he could have just completely shined in the role, and where they would have had confidence in exactly what they wanted their Superman to be, like a fully realized Superman. I thought he was great, and even though I didn't like BVS and obviously Justice League, you know, I liked him in the role, and I thought that there was so much potential there. And yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate. Now, what's interesting is the reaction, at least the last time I checked, it pretty quickly went from like, wow, this sucks, we hate Warner Brothers, they don't know what they're doing, Cavill should have been Superman forever, like, and then immediately was like, oh, but by the way, who's going to be the next Superman?
Yeah.
And like, that seemed to dominate the conversation pretty much the rest of the day, was like, who's going to be the next Superman?
Changed. Super, super fast.
Yeah. And I'm not really sure what to do with that. Like, I don't know if that means that people have just become really fickle, or they love kind of gossiping about who will be cast in a particular role. Or is it just that as much as we liked Cavill in the role, are people just so ready for this chapter of the DCU to kind of just come to an end that they're just already starting to recast like these characters all over again?
Yeah, so it's funny because I don't necessarily think that the role itself would be recast right away, right?
I think
this were to happen, it would take some time and some serious mulling on behalf of the studio to figure out, okay, so if we're going to do Superman again, how are we going to get him right? But the interesting thing about all of the commentary was that, well, at least from the trades, right? So from Variety and from The Hollywood Reporter, was the idea that Warner Brothers already has a contingency plan in place should Cavill's contract cease to exist, right? And that being Supergirl.
Right.
And so relaunching the sort of, I guess, I would say the Krypton, you know, replacing the Krypton body with that of Supergirl and creating a female-led superhero story through her, which is interesting. But what I was saying is on Twitter, and you know, this is actually troubling to me, is that what, two-thirds of your quote-unquote DC Trinity is like not available? Because for all intents and purposes, you know, Affleck at this point could be out of the role of Batman, and it's going to take them a little while to get that started again, and then you're going to remove Superman from the equation as well. So it leaves, and it's not to say that Wonder Woman can't hold it herself with the sort of, I guess, support from Aquaman and the Flash, which still is not in production at all. But I'm struggling with that fact. It's like, how can you have a DC universe without your tentpoles? You know what I mean?
Right.
And if Aquaman doesn't really do all that well, which I know it likely will, but there's a big if, because I don't really have much goodwill in the DC universe. But if it doesn't do well, then what does that ultimately mean for the rest of, you know, the characters that they're trying to create? So there's just a lot of speculation. I mean, we're doing it right now, and just a lot of, I don't know, man. I don't know how I really feel about a lot of this stuff, other than to say that, you know, this morning's news certainly disappointed me tremendously. But there's still some weird tomfoolery happening right now.
Yeah, well, I mean,
the whole conversation.
Yeah, and we'll get into that in a second. But, like, for me, I tweeted out right after the news broke that I was like, well, you know, we're going to have a new Batman, right? And eventually, right, we probably will have a new Superman, if they even go that route at any point.
Right.
And with Wonder Woman basically retconning a lot of things from BVS so that the movie basically stands on its own, and with Aquaman, I'm assuming, being able to stand on its own, like, is this now, like, the official end of that chapter of the DC Universe? And is this now the beginning of whatever this new plan is going to be, where they're going to pick the strong points from the existing stuff and then just kind of start over with a lot of everything else?
Yeah, and I mean, the only really strong thing is Wonder Woman, right? That's the only,
for now. I mean, who knows? Like, movie. We don't know, right, what,
yeah,
Aquaman,
yeah,
is going to
very,
be
very true. We don't know what Shazam will do. We don't know, right, what Aquaman will do. But yep, but up until this point, the only proven factor, proven from box office, you know, period, is Wonder Woman.
Yes.
So that's a lot of weight to put on a movie that was like midway through a franchise.
Yep.
In terms of timing, right? So who knows?
Yeah,
I
and
mean,
it's going to be real interesting with Shazam too, because you mentioned Shazam. And Shazam plays a role in this, because the Hollywood Reporter story, now apparently Hollywood Reporter has close ties to Warner Brothers, which is why people are putting a lot of stock into that story. But the gist of the story is that, you know, the negotiations broke down for him to do a cameo in Shazam, and that's basically what's like leading to a lot of this speculation. So when you couple that together with this Supergirl news, like, it basically, even though nothing's official, like, the writing is on the wall that things don't look very good at all. Like, if he's not going to be in Shazam, and then they're not going to be doing a Man of Steel sequel anytime soon, and they're going to be shifting the focus to Supergirl, which will reset the timelines, basically, for Superman. Like, it's basically like what they're doing with Matt Reeves with his Batman movie, which is resetting timelines and going back to, like, a younger Batman and all that stuff. So it's like the writing's on the wall that things don't look good for Cavill doing,
yeah,
this. But now, what do they do with Shazam? Because clearly he was meant to have a cameo in the movie if they were negotiating for it, right?
Right.
So
yeah,
if that's not going to happen now, and
he,
we already saw
with Wonder Woman.
Well, or we saw the Easter eggs though in that still photo that everybody went crazy over,
they'll
referencing
that,
Man of Steel, referencing, you know, Justice League and stuff like that. I guess they'll get rid of that stuff, which I think how they handle that will speak volumes to what they think the future of Superman is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, up until this point, They're done filming, right? Shazam. So I'm sure that what David F. Sandberg is pulling together his rough cut, or already has, because the movie's coming out in April. So I wouldn't be surprised if we hear there are some reshoots, specifically with the kids stuff. If this ends up not, you know, if the whole Cavill thing actually ends up happening and he's not Superman anymore, they're gonna scrub that. They're gonna have to scrub it.
The wall is gonna become the Henry Cavill's lip. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It'll be like rubber newspapers and stuff like that that just stretch. It'll be a Roger Rabbit movie.
Yeah, or they could just put vague references to things that don't necessarily tie directly into,
right,
specific,
it's, you know,
scenes.
It's kind of interesting to me that they did do that in Shazam, considering the path that that was happening. And it may be because Shazam was sort of entering production as the dust was settling on the regime change and all of that. But, you know, to see images that directly reference, you know, the two main characters specifically that may no longer be part of the franchise at this point is an odd choice.
Yep.
And one that I'm sure that they may actually end up, you know, it may get switched entirely. It might be a Wonder Woman and a Aquaman.
It might be.
Just to bring some of that cohesiveness.
Yeah.
Gosh, what a day it's been on this whole thing.
Yeah.
Really.
You had the piece that you were telling me about right before we started to record. You started telling me, and then we hit record,
yeah,
basically, where
so...
I lost track of this story somewhere around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and you said, like, some weird things started happening.
Yeah, so, before I get into that, so the story drops in the morning, and then Danny Garcia, who is infamously, you know, tied to Dwayne The Rock Johnson and is the manager of Henry Cavill, releases a statement countering the story to a degree, saying that, no, you know, Henry is still very much involved with DC. Nothing directly pointing to, yeah, he will always be Superman. Nothing.
He
to
said
that
the cape is still in the closet or something like that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So then that happens. And then Warner Brothers also releases a statement saying that they have tremendous respect for Henry and all of that good stuff, and that, you know, these are just like sort of, I don't want to say that they're empty, but these are very much, these are political statements in a sense, right? Very,
yes,
very sort of like,
yeah,
you have to read between the lines. It's not really, it's not black or white.
Right.
They're playing, both of them are playing in the gray
things
area.
To keep the conversation going, clearly.
Right, right. I'll get into the speculation in a little bit on where I actually think some of this is going.
But talk about that video you were telling me about.
Yeah, and then Henry Cavill releases a video on Instagram. He's wearing a Krypton team shirt, and there's some really weird music playing. He's not making any facial expressions. He's just got this very stoic look. And as the song is going on, a 12-inch, still in the box, Superman figure, like, is brought into frame. You know, so imagine it's like his top torso, brought into frame, and that's the end of that. It just looked like the video, and it was like probably a 45-second, a minute video of him, still with the Superman stuff on. So I don't. Oh, and then saying, "Oh, today was a very interesting day," or something like that, something along those lines. And it's like, whoa, what is going on here? It is literally like a live action soap opera happening. Like, I just saw it a little while ago, so I'm still kind of reeling from the whole thing, because it, to me, this feels like a game of chicken between Henry Cavill and Warner Brothers, right? So, essentially, you know, from what I understand, is that someone may have gone early on the story with the Hollywood Reporter. Who knows where that came from and who the source is or whatever, but it certainly feels like two sides are trying to send messages to one another. And what the interesting thing was, and what I said at the beginning of this when we opened up this segment, was that the idea of Henry Cavill not playing Superman anymore has gained more conversation, more,
yeah,
social awareness than he ever has playing Superman. That is a tremendous idea and a tremendous a movement, because if there's anything that's like more passionate in the social, you know, in some social channels, it is the DC fandom. And what it feels like to me is that, like, there was some hardball being played, and maybe, and again, just totally speculating here, somebody decided to kick the mob and put them in a frenzy and really show or prove that, you know, Henry Cavill is a coveted part of the DC universe, and that fans will, like, refute and rebut and bring out their torches and their pitchforks and, like, flip out over Warner Brothers' decision to not have him as Superman anymore.
I mean, it could be. It could be, but I do think, though, it's interesting. I mean, and within our bubble, anyway, our Twitter bubble, like, the conversation quickly turned to, like, who's going to play the Superman now. I don't know if that was, like, the general shift in the conversation, but I don't know what that means either. Like, who, if you look at that, like, if you're Warner Brothers and you're looking at that, you're saying, like, well, we got about an hour and a half of outrage and then, like, a day's worth of, like, recasting options. So what does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, sure, but the thing is, Superman, the hashtag Superman was trending for, like, all of today on social.
Well, that's huge.
And Henry Cavill was trending for a good part of the day. So, you know, and, you know, I get it. People want to – they wanted to move the narrative. They want to shift the conversation. And there was all types of crazy thoughts. And who knows how true it is. I mean, Michael B. Jordan as you know, getting his name getting thrown around and then people speculating on some other folks. So who's to say what's real and what's not? But there certainly seems to be some interesting developments that are still awaiting us in this story, because it's still happening.
Sure,
right?
Is. And I'm not even going to get into, like, the speculation on casting, because we know where that leads anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm actually, while you were talking, I'm watching this video.
It is even more
bizarre than you actually gave it credit for being. When you actually watch it, it's like 25 seconds long, and he doesn't change his expression. He's just stoically staring into the camera, and it's an actual figure of him as Superman, which I didn't realize.
That's what I meant. Sorry.
Yeah, it's him as Superman. Yeah, this is weird. I don't know what. I mean, this is probably just him having fun and seeing if he could break the internet, and because I guess he's got nothing to lose from doing something like that anyway. But yeah, I mean, he certainly got his name out there, that's for sure.
Yeah, this whole thing is just a crazy ass roller coaster, if I'm being honest with you. And
why should we even expect anything less at this point from
I mean, see, here's the thing, like, So the casting thing, you know, him not being Superman is one part of my disappointment. The other part of this is, you know, I know that this conversation has been had for quite a long time, right? We've heard many podcasts. We've heard even from our good friend Mario, you know, editor in chief of Revenge of the Fans, on his podcast, both on the Revengers and on the Fanboy, talking about some of the contract negotiations and some of the stalemates that are happening there. And for folks that sort of know me, I certainly identify myself as a burnt out, sort of on the edge DC fanboy, like, big fan, not feeling it as much as I used to. I was cautiously optimistic about Henry Cavill playing Superman again. I was holding on to that. I mean, that was my thread of optimism.
Yeah, me too.
And the idea of him not playing that role, like, and I know that I'm putting a lot of weight in terms of, you know, his ability and his portrayal as Superman, but that was one of the things that I really enjoyed most of all in you know, this sort of take of the DCU, and I really enjoyed him as Superman more than Brandon Routh. And so, you know, for me, it kind of shakes again any sort of goodwill if I had it on DC, and it leaves me completely like, what the hell is going on over there? Is it, you know, if you're gonna redo it, if you're gonna let's just commit yourself to do it, like, wash it up. Just clean it all up. And if you're not going to do it, then, or if you're going to move forward and try something new, then do that too. But, like, this whole, like, public battle wishy-washy. I don't know. Maybe it's going to be. Maybe it's not going to be. It's like – and maybe it's the PR person in me, but it drives me crazy that there's like literally no control of the message. Even yeah. if – even with their like little news service thing that they announced, there's no control of the message.
Yeah. All. And it's a shame. And, you know, I'm thinking now back, you know, as you're talking about Cavill and how you liked him. And I did as well. But, you know, I – in a lot of ways, the writing was on the wall for this, right? When you really think about it, because Man of Steel happened, okay? And that was going to be the kickoff to all of this, right? So, and, you know, Man of Steel, not nearly as polarizing at the time as I think it gets credit for now, because I think it gets lumped in there with a lot of the stuff that happened afterward. But mm-hmm. a lot of people like Man of Steel. It wasn't a huge critical success. It was significantly better than what came after, but and it did fine at the box office, not gangbusters, right? And from the moment that that movie ended, it seemed like Warner Brothers had lost confidence in either the Superman character or in Cavill or whatever the case was, because from the minute that that happened, the plans for Man of Steel 2 went into immediate shift mode, and like before we know it, it was going to be a Batman and Superman movie. And then it was going to be Wonder Woman in it. And now it's going to introduce the Justice League. And obviously, what should have been Man of Steel 2 became Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, which was now going to... Immediately, they were fast-forwarding right to Justice League. And Batman became the focus of everything, right? And Batman was going to be the focus of Justice League, which was going to be two parts. And the first part was going to be Batman assembling the League. And Superman was dead at that point. So who knows what his involvement was even going to be in the first movie, if it had happened the way it was supposed to happen. Right. And all of a sudden, like, the minimizing of Superman began instantly. And then when Wonder Woman became the kind of the surprise success that it became, she became a focal point of the marketing for Justice League. And, you know, even though Cavill's lip wasn't his fault, it was the fault of the studio for the replacement director, which then caused dramatic reshoots to be needed, which were done at a time when he was working on another movie. I almost feel like he's become like the whipping boy for this, and it's almost unfair because he was one of the best things about it, and it, you know, he, I think, was better than a lot of the material that he was working with, and it but thinking back, it's like, man, like, from the minute Man of Steel was over, this was almost destined to happen. Yeah. And it's unfortunate.
I agree with you. It kind of sucks to see such an iconic hero take the back seat, because the studio just doesn't know what to do with him.
Yeah.
And they don't know – they could not put their finger on what the identity of the DCU was supposed to be, right?
Yep.
I don't know what they were focused on. You know, they basically gave it to Zack Snyder to, you know, to do with it what he will. And he did. And ultimately...
Although he did, but with some studio interference, though.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'd say, like, at a later point, I mean, that's essentially what happened not BVS, because BVS is very... Well, to the back end of BVS, probably,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think so.
And that's probably why we got the cut, the edited, the Ultimate Edition. But that's the thing, I mean... I literally have no words for this because
this was like a no-brainer that became this is the perfect example of overthinking things is what they're doing with this situation right now, at least what we think they're doing anyway.
I mean, I have no idea what the hell's going on in their minds. I really don't. It really is unfortunate. I don't even know who they are. It could be they, Warner Brothers. It could be they, you know, the folks in Cavill's camp. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's definitely, it's gotten really sour. I don't want to say really sour. That's then sort
yeah,
of because
we don't.
The whole
yeah,
thing.
We're not really sure exactly what's
and I don't
happening
really know
in
what's
the
going
boardroom.
On.
Yeah,
but
I mean, Cavill.
I guess time will tell.
Cavill doesn't seem to want to necessarily divorce himself from the part. If you look at like the video he released today. And why would he? I mean, it's Superman. I mean, he'll have a fine career, but he's not going to have anything as big as that in theory, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of funny. That's a ballsy move, and to be honest, I don't like it. I don't like it one bit.
Which
I don't
part?
Like that video at all.
Oh, the one he did?
Yeah, I don't like that video at all.
From as a fan or like as a PR person?
As
both?
A fan, I like detest the video because I don't like being toyed with. And I'm like, just keep your mouth shut, dude. Like, handle your business, get your contract, shut your mouth, do what you got to do. But playing with the hearts and minds of fans is a very, very tricky thing. And, like, if you're sending a hidden message, then you shouldn't be sending it at all. Send us a message. I will still be Superman. Don't play this game, man. I don't like it. Matt Reeves, when he was negotiating his contract, played it right. Didn't get what he wanted, stepped away from negotiations, and it was very, and people were like flabbergasted by it. But you didn't get a statement from Matt Reeves. You didn't get this like carnival show of a he said, she said thing. And then ultimately, Matt Reeves is on for the Batman, and everyone embraced him, and everyone's overjoyed about it, and we're like, finally, you know, we've got someone who's going to do, you know, something good. We really like the work that he's doing. But this video with Cavill, you know, if it doesn't shake out, it's like, dude, well, what were you doing? Like, what's the point of the video?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess the point is for what we're doing right now, right? To get people talking
about
it.
Well, yeah,
to
get us all talking about it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm tired.
Well, yeah, exactly. And
I'm tired.
You know, we'll, obviously this conversation will continue on Twitter and probably on this show in the coming weeks as things just probably continue to develop day to day. But I think for now, Aaron, let's open the garage and start unpacking episode 18.
All right. Let's do it.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, the lovely and talented Aaron Varola.
I spill stuff on a regular basis. What's going on, people?
Yeah, we had a little incident before we started to record tonight. So hopefully we can get through this show.
Yeah, unscathed. Spilling water, causing ruckus, starting Sith. That's what I do.
Yeah, there's nothing... better for an audio podcast than spilling water.
Yeah, the good thing is it just like toppled off my table and then onto the floor, not onto any of my equipment. So it's good.
Awesome.
Could have been bad.
Yeah. Yes.
Crisis averted.
Better than losing power, though.
Yeah. I've had that too, huh?
I'm
just like the klutz of the group. Right. Apparently.
As if you had like, control over the power loss. But
yeah, well, you know, it's like whatever's bad, it's going to happen. It's going to happen to me.
All right.
So, here we go.
All right. So we're going to start off some sad news that we got with Burt Reynolds passing. Burt Reynolds, a legend of television and film. And for me, I guess everybody will have sort of their own memory or their own favorite movies. And I guess, you know, a lot of people say Cannonball Run or Smokey and the Bandit. And for me, Burt Reynolds will, and I love Cannonball Run, but for me, Burt Reynolds will always be known for Boogie Nights, which is one of the greatest movies ever made. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. If you haven't seen it, you should. One of the great ensemble casts of all time. Burt Reynolds, Mark Wahlberg, Julianne Moore, John C. Reilly, William H. Macy, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Don Cheadle, Thomas Jane. I mean, it's an insane cast. And such a great movie. Great soundtrack. Great use of music. Oh, of course, Alfred Molina in his one scene, which is one of the most memorable scenes in movie history. Yeah. But Burt Reynolds, brilliant in that movie. And that was like his big kind of comeback, sort of. And it's unfortunate that I didn't know this, but I read it, you know, after he passed away. He was not proud of that role.
Yeah, I read that recently.
Yeah, he basically did it for the money, and I don't even think he ever saw the movie, even though it won him a Golden Globe and got him an Oscar nomination. It was not something that he was very proud of, which was, you know, a little disappointing to find out, but he's fantastic in that movie.
Yeah, I agree. He is, I mean, there's that whole, like, the climax with a roller girl in the limousine.
Heather Graham, too, and I forgot about her.
So good.
Yeah.
Man, the way he just kind of turns it on. You know, how old was he when he died? 82,
I think, yeah.
82. Looking to make a comeback, was rumored to be in Quentin Tarantino's latest flick, which is currently in production.
Yeah, he didn't get to film his scene, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it was something like the third comeback of good old Burt. But yeah, he'll sorely be missed. I mean, he's definitely a phenomenal actor, crazy filmography, and I think pretty much everything that he'd been in was, decent and good.
Yeah.
I can't really think of anything that was like bad.
I mean, I'm sure there was some stuff in there, but I mean, Deliverance and a lot of brilliant stuff.
Yeah, I particularly liked him in the original Longest Yard.
There you go, another classic.
It's a good movie. Unfortunately, the remake with Adam Sandler didn't live up to the classic version. It's one of those cases where the remake actually doesn't make the original better.
No, not
in my opinion. But rest in peace, Bert. I know you'll be missed, and but he's certainly given us a robust library of things to continue his memory and watching him in film.
Yeah, and if in tribute, everybody should, as soon as they finish listening to this podcast, should watch two things: the outtakes from the Cannonball Run and Boogie Nights, just in tribute to Burt Reynolds.
All right, and grow a mustache.
Well, you can grow them. I mean, no one's going to be able to pull it off as cool, though.
Oh, man, I forgot he did. He was the voice in All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Well, you're man. Going with the deep cuts now.
Yeah, that tore me up, that movie. And Cop and a Half? What? Yeah, no, I mean, this dude, I'm just kind of flipping through his filmography.
He had a great cameo on The Golden Girls, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, anyways.
Well, let's talk about the news that actually broke today, right? Kelvin Chavez over at the Splash Report had the exclusive that Derek Mears, who has previously played Jason Voorhees in the Friday the 13th remake, reboot, whatever you call that, he will be playing the Swamp Thing creature in the Swamp Thing series that's going to be on DC Universe.
That's really cool. But also interesting. I mean, I wonder, because, Jason Voorhees doesn't speak.
No, he doesn't.
So he certainly has the size, yes, which I think people would expect for Swamp Thing. But Swamp Thing does talk, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, he's obviously not going to play Alec Holland, right? So they're going to cast somebody for that, whether it's going to be for flashbacks, right, or at least like in the first episode or whatever. And I guess we're going to find out whether that actor will be voicing over being the voice of the creature, and Derek Mears will literally just be like the creature in physical form, or whether Derek Mears will get to, voice the character once he becomes Swamp Thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm inclined to think, that you know, they would do the voiceover. I mean, I've never heard the man speak, so he could be completely...
I mean, I've seen him in interviews.
He could be fine.
Yeah, but I don't know what they're going for.
Yeah, it's like the weird... I don't think it's weird, actually. It's a wrong choice of words. But like the Abe Sapien in Hellboy 1 was not voiced by Doug Jones, but was in the second one. And there really isn't that much of a difference. I think I even remember Doug Jones in an interview saying that... he was kind of a little disappointed that he couldn't bring the character to life completely. You know, he had to have a voice actor.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll see. I mean, I guess you'll find that out once they do cast their Alec Holland. Well, they've been casting like crazy in the last week or so for that show. So I'm actually excited for Swamp Thing, mainly because the people that are involved in it. I mean, James Wan's executive producing. Len Wiseman, who has worked on, I mean, he's, I guess, kind of known for the Underworld franchise, but he really has done work in television on Lucifer and The Gifted, which are two really good, like, comic book television shows. He's going to be directing the pilot episode. So, yeah, I think there's some good pedigree here with this show, and I think it's got a chance to be really good.
Yeah, I know that there's some folks out there that have already started to trial the DC Universe, right?
Yes.
Is it available?
No, it's officially out on in a couple of days from when people will be, you know, when this show drops. September 15th is the actual go live date, but there was a beta release, which I didn't know about. Even though I was signed up for this thing within the first 5 minutes of the presale, I didn't realize that there was like a special sign up for the beta. So I missed out on that. Like, I didn't wind up applying for that until like a week ago after I saw all these people putting up tweets about how they're testing it out. So I'm assuming at this point I'm not going to get that invite.
Yeah,
and I'll just wait.
I was going to say, good old Justin Kowalski of Batman on Film has been talking about it. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Kind of feel like the odd man out because, you know, I'm not, I'd say I'm like 30% I want to get it.
So you haven't signed up yet?
No, I have not signed up yet. And but now that I see everyone kind of talking about it, specifically some of the older Superman stuff, I'm like, damn, I should get in on this.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, what you're signing up for right now, I mean, the pre-order, you know, you're getting three additional months free, so you're getting 15 months. So it is a pretty good deal, but also, you're really paying right now for a lot of classic stuff, because the new stuff isn't debuting yet for a little while. But they seem to be doing a really good job. I mean, from what I understand, like, the first two seasons, at least, I think, of Batman the Animated Series are going to be up in HD in advance of the October 30th release date of the entire box set. So that's kind of exciting. And I think I read somewhere that, like, even, like, Wonder Woman is going to be available in HD for the first time, the Linda Carter show.
Oh, cool.
So, I don't know if I just read that wrong or if I actually read it correctly, but, yeah, I think this is going to be a really exciting... a really exciting service, and I'm pumped for it. I'm also pumped to have Batman the Animated Series back on a streaming service, because even though I own it on DVD and I also have already pre-ordered the Blu-ray box set, I like having it available to stream, and they took it off of Amazon Prime about a few weeks ago, I think, in advance of this service coming out, which kind of stinks. And although I am excited about the fact that they announced that one of the reasons why they pushed the release date back of the box set for Batman the Animated Series is because I think they're going to include digital codes, which will be exciting if that's true. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. You get everything. You get,
it seems like.
And it's HD, right? It's not 4K?
No, it's HD. Yeah, it's no 4K for now.
Got it.
And I actually did get to see a preview. They did like a side-by-side comparison, a little like sizzle reel, and it's going to look amazing. So I'm very excited about this.
Yeah. Animation typically transfers pretty nicely in HD.
Yes.
Like, it looks really good. 4K stuff, still hit or miss. So kind of hard to tell. I have the Dark Crystal on 4K, and it's good, but not as, you know. There's, and you know what? Actually, it's not that it's a bad thing, because I like the green that you see from film,
right?
So
which they should maintain, actually, even if they do a transfer. Yeah, I mean, that there's no reason why that should be gotten rid of.
Yeah.
So that would be
very cool.
So speaking of HD, this, you know, the new fall TV season is starting to get up and running now, and it's kind of in full swing by the time people will be hearing this. And I know you've been watching a couple of things that you were pretty excited about that I have not seen.
Yeah. So I think the first one, and it's a show that I literally just pulled myself away from to do this podcast. that's Ozark. I should be two episodes away from finishing it, and holy cow, is it a intense season. It dropped maybe a week ago, last Saturday, the 31st. And it's a show that I would love to binge and just kind of like power through, but it ultimately leaves my soul darker than it should be. And I need a little break, because it's really heavy. But it's an amazing season. In fact, I think it's better than season one. And I will say that the acting is top notch, like above their its weight, top notch. It's a really, really damn good show. That stars Jason Bateman and Laura Kinney, being something like that. Wait, yeah, I think that's her name. I would totally recommend it for folks. So if you haven't seen Ozark, tune in. It's on Netflix. And the episodes will certainly get away from you, because it's just, it is binge worthy. But, you know, again, my soul needs a little break. And the other show that I've been watching is Better Call Saul on AMC. And if you're not watching that show, shame on you, because it is also phenomenal. And Bob Odenkirk is just brilliant, absolutely brilliant in that show. And it just does such a great job at tying into the, you know, the Breaking Bad, I guess, mythology, seasons, show. There are nice elements that kind of call back to it, and some characters that appear that are super important to the Breaking Bad story. And I'm pretty much up to date on that show. And it's really good. At the moment, I'm kind of like drowning in shows to watch, because there's also my little, I don't want to say guilty pleasures, because they're just my wife's pleasures that I happen to watch by default, which I will not name here because they are quite embarrassing. I think one show that I know you've probably started that I have not is Iron Fist. So yes. You want to talk about your impressions of that?
So I started Iron Fist. Now, an interesting thing is happening with me with the Marvel Netflix shows. Yeah. I'm so taken aback, I can't even get it out. But I started and I got three episodes in and then I stopped. So it's so far is better than the first season. Because the fight choreography mainly is better. But the same thing happened to me now with Luke Cage season 2. Prior to Luke Cage season 2, I have binged every one of these Marvel Netflix shows like within the first weekend, basically, like the first 2 days of it being released. And Luke Cage season 2, I got about 4 episodes in and then just got distracted and haven't gone back to it. And now with Iron Fist season 2, I got 3 episodes in and then got distracted and so far have yet to revisit it. Now, I will eventually finish both shows, but I think I'm just kind of fatigued now with these shows. And I don't know that they're bringing enough to the table for me. Now, I'm still very excited about Daredevil Season 3 because Vincent D'Onofrio is going to be back as the Kingpin. That's exciting. I'm excited.
They released a trailer for that.
I know. And I'm excited for Punisher Season 2 because I loved that show and I loved the characters and the acting. And I, even though I didn't love Jessica Jones season two as much as I loved the first season, I'm still will be excited for Jessica Jones season three. But
yeah,
so far with Luke Cage, and I didn't love The Defenders either, but it wasn't that many episodes and I did get through it. But
yeah,
they're losing me a little bit here.
Yeah.
And I just think that it's because they're not bringing that much to the table for me. And unless I truly love the characters and I truly love some element of the show, you know, it's going to be a little bit more of a struggle for me. Like the days of me automatically just sitting there over like a day or two and watching these things from beginning to end, I think are over. It's going to have to be like a special season or a special show for me to do that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I think I don't know how to link this. But in terms of my comparison, I'm like exactly with you. I think, and I don't know if it's because we are attracted to violence. It sounds really bad. But the grittiness and the sort of realism that's in both, I'd say, the Punisher and Daredevil and even Jessica Jones to some extent, because there's a lot of vulnerability that is sort of written in that show, and some really, really dark stuff. And then you kind of get the Luke Cage, which is, I don't know, it feels a little hokey, if that makes sense. I share your feeling. Like, I thought Luke Cage first season started off really well.
Yep.
And then it just puttered out by like mid season. Like, it just wasn't interesting to me anymore. And Iron Fist, I think, also maybe up until like episode three, I was kind of like, okay, I'm getting a little tired of this like naive character and the fight sequence. And we talked about this in previous episodes, yep. But and the fight sequence was like, not really all that good. And then the story kind of puttered out as well up until the end. And then Defenders was fine. I was like, nah, okay. I was watching it more for Daredevil.
I mean, I'm gonna be honest with you. I barely even remember what the Defenders was about.
Yeah, it was,
and that was supposed to be like the Avengers of that first phase of those shows, and like I barely remember anything that happened in it.
Yeah, it was lackluster. And then, you know, what's funny is season two of Luke Cage, I am forcing myself to watch it.
Yeah.
I really am.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
I'm working my way through, like, towards the middle of each night. I'm like, maybe I'll start on an episode. And most of the time, I'm, like, kind of flipping through my phone while I'm watching it. I'm not really, like, tuned in. And I hope that's not the case with Iron Fist, because I like martial arts. This kind of thing speaks to my heart a little bit. I like the trailer. Everything I've kind of heard from folks on the, you know, in the Twitterverse has been like that it's better than the first, so great.
Yeah, but although that may not be the highest praise necessarily.
Yeah, that's not the highest praise at all. And the thing is, I can tell that it's like the lowest, you know, I'm on our totem pole, because like my wife and I won't tune into it.
Right.
Like, just like, oh yeah, we'll get to it. It's not one of those things where we're like, oh yeah, we're gonna go watch it right away.
I think it might be time for them to change things up a little bit with these, like, these other characters besides like Daredevil and Punisher and Jessica Jones. Yeah. Like, it might be time for them to either do like the, you know, the Power Man and Iron Fist team up show, or
Heroes
since,
Fire.
Yeah, or since I've been hearing so many people basically saying that once again, you know, Colleen Wing is the best thing in Iron Fist, and that, you know, Misty Knight has also been great in every one of the shows that she's popped up in. Maybe it's time they do the Daughters of the Dragon show too, and give them their own show, because, you know, Jessica Henwick is really great, and I think that if they're going to be the best parts of these shows now going forward, why not give them their own show? Let's just change it up a little bit. Doesn't have to be, it's becoming too formulaic, and I think that's part of the problem for me.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we're going to segue this into one of the questions that we got. Are we? I think so. Yes.
Yeah, we can.
It's from our boy Brent about the connectivity.
Yeah. So Brent asks, where do we stand on his great debates that day regarding the MCU and Marvel TV? Is it all connected? Reminder, TV includes ABC, Freeform, Hulu, and Netflix. So that day, Brent happened to spend a lot of time debating the connectivity of all of this and whether it's all connected or not. So, I mean, I know that we, you know, we've talked about this, you know, off air before. And, you know, my thing with this is, They're connected, okay? So they're technically they're connected in the sometimes in the most vague sense, but sometimes, you know, a little more than that. The thing is, I think everybody knows at this point that these shows were supposed to be very connected, right? So Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., when it first started, was very connected to the MCU in that it was a show built around Phil Coulson. Obviously, it was a spinoff for him. He was born in the film universe. Right. And we all remember how the events of Captain America Civil, the Winter Soldier completely changed the course of that show. Right. Like it literally like halfway through that first season, like the entire show changed.
Right.
Because of what happened at the end of Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Right. The fall of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah. And you had Sif from Thor show up in an episode or two. So like there were real deep ties there. And then Marvel Studios split off from Marvel Entertainment because Kevin Feige, who runs Marvel Studios, and Ike Perlmutter, who runs Marvel Entertainment, do not like each other. So because of the success of the MCU, Marvel Studios was split off, and now Kevin Feige reports directly to the head of the CEO of Disney. And Ike Perlmutter is running Marvel Entertainment, which is responsible for the television and all the other aspects of the universe. So ever since that split, things have become connected sometimes in name or brief mention only.
Right.
And you've gotten a lot less of those tie-ins. I mean, we all know we saw Avengers Tower, right, in Daredevil season one, and there were all these hopes of that, whether, you know, these characters would pop up in the movies or whatever. And I think any chance of that ever happening now is pretty much over.
I mean, I sort of remain cautiously optimistic that at some point there has to be some sort of... See, the funny thing is that the TV mentions the movies, but the movies don't mention anything
ever
related to the TVs.
Yeah. And
outside
like,
of Coulson. But once Coulson died, like, that was it.
Well, but that's the thing, though. Coulson died before Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. happened. So in theory, they've never even mentioned in the movies that Phil Coulson is like. Do they even know that he's alive?
Who knows?
And now he's gonna. Now he's
coming
off,
back.
Well, he's off Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. now, but now he's coming back into the movies, but in prequel form because he'll be in Captain Marvel, which is a prequel to all of this. So it's you're right. Like the movies never acknowledge the TV, but the TV will make mention of things that are going on in the movies.
Yeah, so like an appearance from Nick Fury. You know, you mentioned Sif.
Yeah.
They mentioned, actually, in this past season, they mentioned Thanos.
They did, but that was, see, to me, that's like the... They mentioned Thanos in a way where it was almost like... We just need to, like, here we go. Oh, let's remind people that this is still connected. It had absolutely no purpose other than just, like, to be a mention. And it didn't necessarily directly affect the... Even though they wanted you to think it was directly affecting the plot, it kind of didn't. It was like, oh, by the way, Thanos is, like, going to Earth.
Yeah, so the funny thing is, to me, it's the ABC shows feel more... connected, and when I say connected, I mean like a thread, the tiniest of threads, to the larger MCU. There's only really one ABC show, so it's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The Netflix shows, if there is a connection, it's like a spider web, like the tiniest thread of a spider.
Yes.
No pun intended. And they reference the MCU in like weird metaphorical ways, like the angry green guy.
Yes,
or the incident.
Yep, the incident in New York. Or
right.
Whatever. Yeah.
And there have been like little hints of like Harlem destroyed, because we know that's where the Incredible Hulk
right.
took place.
Yep.
The final battle between Abomination and Hulk. So there's like little stuff like that. I actually almost got excited in Luke Cage because, spoiler alert, Misty gets a new arm. And I would have been like, man, this would have been a perfect introduction of Iron Man to have given her some sort of like arm, because she loses her arm in the Defenders. Again, spoiler alert. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough – I don't – know that I ever
but,
kind of expected Tony Stark to pop up on.
No, but you know, just you hope,
right.
And because I knew, I had seen pictures of her with this mechanical arm, and I was like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe she had some Iron Man tech or something like that. But no,
yep.
It was Danny Rand.
Yes,
I guess you know, these billionaires all have some sort of like robotics division, some R&D division where they're creating arms and armor and all that crap.
Of course they do. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a shame. I think there's a lot. There would have been a lot of potential to do it. I mean, obviously, in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. first season, they did a great job, to a certain degree. I say great job loosely, at tying things up. I do think the Asgardian stuff was probably the weakest shows. I was just like, oh god, I'd rather you not connect this, because you've got Janosch from Ghostbusters 2 playing an Asgardian. Come on,
yeah.
Come
well,
on,
they did what they, but I mean, looking back at the other, so like Netflix, obviously, I'm sorry, Hulu, that's The Runaways, which I loved, but even though it is considered part of the MCU, again, there was, other than like a kind of a connection to Doctor Strange, there really wasn't much there to that. And I have not seen Cloak and Dagger yet, so I can't speak to what they've done on Freeform. But I'm sure it's probably more of the same, right? If anything, I can't imagine that there's serious connections there.
Yeah,
I haven't
seen that show either. But yeah, I imagine it's loose.
But yeah,
if,
I mean, there
at all.
Yeah, and it you know, where it starts to get crazy is, you know, and this is the downside, I think, to these shared universes, is where it starts to get crazy is like, okay, you know, if these shows and movies all exist in the same universe, there, you can't just make mentions of things and expect people to accept the fact that they're completely connected, right? Because, like, especially after Infinity War, like, how is that not supposed to affect, like, these people's worlds? Or even little things like, you know, the Netflix stuff, which is supposed to be, like, the street level, they keep saying these are the street level heroes or whatever. Well, are they? I mean, you're telling me Luke Cage, who is essentially indestructible, couldn't have helped, like, fight Thanos? Like, I think he could have come in handy. You're telling me that they never run into Spider-Man, like, at any point? They're you know, I mean, this is a kid who lives in New York. I mean, how is that possible? Like, that never happens. And, you know, even the Spider-Man that we met in Civil War, you know, the guy in the pajamas, basically.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, how is that not a thing? So when you really start to, you know, to look at it, which is what we do, right, as hardcore fans, it starts to become like, you know, I almost either have them be connected or not. Let them either be their own universe where they can establish their own continuity and establish their own connections, or be full on, as much as you can anyway. You know, like I said, none of us expect to see Captain America or Thor or Iron Man popping up on Daredevil, but, you know, try something at least beyond just saying like, oh yeah, we heard this, or this was something that happened, or the green guy, or things like that.
Yeah.
You mentioned.
I mean, I think, you know, like, again, I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is probably the most pseudo slightly connected. I mean, they're still, all they did up until last season, we're talking about Kree's.
Right.
And Kree's,
well, that was the basis for a lot of the...
Yeah, and then Kree's popped up in Guardians of the Galaxy, and then we're going to be getting a whole treat of Kree's from Captain Marvel.
Yeah, but I mean, if they have to keep doing, like, these convenient things to, like, oh, this person was in jail during that, or, oh, this person was out in outer space during that, or, oh, this... It's like, really? Come on. You know, like, you keep coming up with excuses for why, like, why wouldn't the Inhumans be able to help out? you know, with Thanos. Why why is Phil Coulson not letting anybody know that he's alive? You know, like all of these things, and it's just like it gets frustrating, but you know, that's if you're sitting there analyzing the hell out of it, which we are
playing continuity
game. Yeah, I don't know how everybody is. I'll be interested to see though with Coulson now not really being a part of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for the next season, like does that become the thing where now they put more separation between that show and the cinematic universe? Because he was really the main connective tissue there, obviously.
Right. Yeah. I don't know, we'll see. I don't even know if I'll be tuning in.
I don't know. I don't think I am. I think I like I said I on one of our earlier episodes when we talked, I think right after the episode happened, I felt that that was a good finale for the series. Yeah,
they should have left it.
Yeah, and we don't need to go forward.
Right.
So.
Right. All right.
Yeah. Well, so now though we're not fully done with that topic, right? Because Nathan Odinson, he of the amazing Batman Beyond idea from last episode.
Such a good question and comment, man. Yeah. Awesome.
He says, to play on Brent's question, let's compare the MCU's version of It's All Connected and compare it to the franchise, in my opinion, that is truly all connected, Star Wars. We knew the books and animated series were canon in Star Wars, but they really ramped it up by bringing Thrawn into Rebels. And then they threw it into overdrive when they had the character reveal at the end of Solo, connecting the animated universe with the books and the movies. So you know a little bit about Star Wars.
Do I?
That's what I've heard, anyway.
Yeah. No, they're really good at that. And a part of that is because they have the whole, like, storyboard, the story group, that sort of works behind the scenes and stitches things together. You know, from what I understand, you know, there will be a character that'll be introduced in, say, a book form and or a movie, and they'll say, hey, can we make it this person? Just to show a little bit of that connectivity. Now, the problem is, while they do a phenomenal job at connecting all of the books and the comics and the movies and everything else under the sun, to one universe. Some of those things don't really pay off in the end. Like specifically from the books, there's a lot of really, really good storytelling that they do in the books. And there's a lot of good character building that they do in the books. And, it doesn't necessarily translate when you see it in film. Right. So, couple of examples there are, Leia, and her connection to Admiral Holdo, which goes a lot deeper than people may assume, right? So she kind of came, for folks that only watched the movie, The Last Jedi, she kind of comes out of left field. But for folks that have read the books, like Princess Leia, she is a childhood friend of hers. And you get the whole reason why her hair is purple and how she was part of the Imperial Senate, like, you know, young, basically it's like a young Republicans group, pretty much like a young senators group. And that's kind of how it's all built out. But, you know, you only get the slightest of hints in their interaction that they have been very, very long friends, or friends for a very, very long time, because folks are watching and you've only been introduced to her. The other thing that you don't realize is that the last battle, that planet Crete, was one of the initial planets that Bail Organa hid the rebellion on and started the rebellion. So they don't really mention a lot of that stuff. It's kind of there in context. And for those folks that have read the books, you're kind of treated to a nice surprise when those things are brought to life. A character, by the way, that popped up in The Force Awakens, played by Greg Grunberg, who's often appears in J.J. Abrams movies, is a character who's called Snap Wexley, who played a extremely important part in a trilogy books called the Aftermath series. And, you know, you don't really know anything about him, and he doesn't really get any shine, but he's quite a big character. So it's like stuff like that. I mean, again, I think the comparison between Marvel and the way that they kind of don't connect their universe and then the Star Wars universe is that you've got two very they're on two very different sides of the coin. So you've got like no connectivity or very limited connectivity and then hyper connectivity to the point where it's just it's like too much. And you know, you always end up with like, who is this person or who's that person? And you definitely will get a story about them somewhere in a book, you know? So like I actually stopped reading it, but I read the Han Solo one shot and there's a lot of stuff that's kind of dropped in that book that is just glossed over in the Solo, a Star Wars movie. So they only have, you know.
Right. And there's some stuff now that isn't canon anymore and all that, you know, as far as books and whatnot.
Well,
but,
yeah. So that's the legend stuff that was once the extended universe.
Yes.
That's all gone. Everything that's sort of kicked up right before The Force Awakens and everything after is now canon.
Right.
And it's all connected.
Now, I think to get to Nathan's point, though, specifically, like where he talks about Rebels and all that. So, you know, now we're looking at it in the sense that where Marvel has these movies, right, and they have these TV shows, which, like we just talked about, are they're technically supposed to be connected, but, like that's really up for debate, right? But with Star Wars, like the TV shows that we've gotten and the movies, they're very much connected because, you know, they're two very different situations. So with Star Wars, it's Lucasfilm driving all of this, right?
Right.
Lucasfilm is, even the books, Lucasfilm is overseeing and having to approve everything that has the Star Wars name on it.
Yeah.
So they're approving stories for books. They're approving these TV shows. They're approving, obviously, the movies. They're making all of this. So it's essentially they're telling one big story, but you're just seeing different parts of that story that they're choosing to tell for this show or for this movie or for this book. Whereas with the MCU, you have Marvel Studios, which has one agenda, and you have Marvel Entertainment, Marvel Television, which has another agenda.
Right.
And those agendas sometimes clash. Sometimes they don't gel. Sometimes they don't. It doesn't pay for them to be connected. But I think there's this feeling that, well, we need to let people believe it's connected because it'll help us, right? Because the MCU is the big thing now. So just that's a marketing thing by itself, right? As long as people believe that these things are happening in this Avengers universe, then somehow it's special. So I think that's the key difference. You have one in this is, you know, if Marvel Studios was running all of this, the TV and the movies and every and the comics and everything else, you would have a similar situation to what you have with Star Wars.
Right.
But that's not how the model is set up. Even though they're now both owned by Disney, the models are set up completely different. And I think that's why Star Wars is more cohesive, because like I said, it's one studio telling one story and we're just getting different chapters of that story depending on, you know, whether it's streaming service, television, books, movies and whatnot, video games.
Yeah. No, that's all fair. You know, who knows how, you know, which one is successful. I mean, I think it's always fun as you watch as a Star Wars fan to see things pop up, you know, seeing Chopper pop up in Rogue One or which is a character in Rebels for those that don't know, or to see Darth Maul pop up in Star Wars, you know, a Solo Star Wars story. And ultimately, you know, knowing where he ends up, that's also part of it, but it's also a downfall in my opinion, because who the hell cares what he's done in between Solo a Star Wars story and where he ends up on Tatooine and who he meets there. You know what I mean? Like, that's the biggest problem for me, is that now, you know, for the characters that we do know, and when they've teased bits and pieces of them throughout a particular timeline and they can flash forward and flash back, that person is still stuck to that line. Ultimately, he's going to end at a certain point. So anything he's done in between there may not be all that interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's where, you know, the other conversation is, that's when we start to ask how much connectivity is too much connectivity, you know, and it's like, at what point do we just sit there and say, like, oh man, you know, like, or, you know, would we rather have, that's why when it comes to DC, like, when I talk about DC, like, they're in a situation that could very much be like Lucasfilm, right, where they're in control of the comics, the movies, the TV, everything, right? So they could be doing that if they wanted to. You know, telling that one big story in different chapters. But I still would wish that, you know, DC goes in the direction of more standalone stories that have some connective tissue to them. And then, you know, eventually you could have these, you know, team up type things if you wanted to. Because I do think that too much connectivity can be overwhelming. And I'm someone who at this point would prefer a little bit more separation. So, you know, I don't necessarily have a problem if there's less connectivity than what people are used to now.
Yeah, yeah, I'd like some loosening of the ropes.
Yeah,
for sure.
So tied into kind of these two topics that we just talked about, JRB, he says he was going through our episode archive. Episode 3, Star Wars Fandom, is still his favorite. He gave it another listen last week. He wants to know if we're still planning on finishing up the MCU focus.
Yeah. I mean, I think so.
Yeah.
In terms of finishing that series off, I mean, we have and did dedicate quite a few episodes to DC. There's still quite a lot for us to cover on the MCU side of things, but most certainly, you know, there's just been so much stuff for us to talk about. But yeah, we can definitely get back into that. And we will have a special episode next week that's Star Wars focused that he should enjoy, I hope.
Yeah, well, yeah. First of all, thanks, Jeremy, for the kind words about
Star Wars consistently listening.
And that, too. And but yeah, I mean, technically, we didn't even really start an MCU focus yet. We basically were doing the Marvel focus, which was, well, you started with Spider-Man, and we even did like an X-Men episode. But we've sprinkled a lot of MCU throughout our episodes. Like, we did a lot of Guardians of the Galaxy in one episode. It's hard to do.
We like to spread the love, though. You know,
we do. Yeah,
yeah. That's the one thing. You know, a lot of folks seem to be fixated on like what's happening with DC, and you'll certainly get that kind of stuff from us. You know, our commentary on what we think is going on and the movies that we're gravitating towards and our excitement levels. But there's a whole lot of stuff that, and just because it's Marvel doesn't mean that it's, you know, I'm sure people are to some degree are tired of it, but it's still a relative topic to talk about. So we'll always talk about
both. Yeah, and we will eventually, I think maybe after Avengers 4, which I'm going to assume will have some finality to it, at least with some of our characters, maybe we'll do like an MCU focus on like taking it phase by phase and kind of looking at it that way and how things evolved or devolved, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, we got into an interesting debate about that recently. So thank you guys to everyone who kind of chimed in on that one. But it was a lively debate between a whole bunch of people. But I, you know,
yeah, it's definitely an interesting topic, and I think that'll have to be the focus of a series of episodes. And if for anybody that hasn't listened back to some of those Star Wars episodes, if you are a Star Wars fan, maybe some of our newer listeners, we did three episodes. The episode 3 that JRB referenced, which was Star Wars: The Phantom Menace, talking about Star Wars fandom at the time. Things were fairly haywire when we did that episode. And then we did episode 4, which was Solo: A Star Wars Dissection, which is currently still our most popular episode, which will eventually be overtaken. But as of now, it's sitting as our most popular episode, where we had what started out as a debate over Solo. I did not like it. Aaron did like it. But by the end of the episode, a very fascinating thing happens, and we start to talk more, and that led to Aaron actually talking about how he did not want an Obi-Wan movie, because now he decided he didn't want prequels anymore, which led to episode 6, where we start out talking about Jurassic Park, but then Rick Shue, the great Rick Shue from Batman on Film, he joined us he needed to talk to Aaron. So they
he had a bone to pick with me.
He did, and they go back and forth with some thoughts from myself on whether we should have an Obi-Wan movie and other elements of Star Wars fandom. So those three episodes together kind of form a nice little trilogy on Star Wars, and we will be doing more Star Wars going forward, like Aaron said. So.
Yeah, yeah, and Rick and I are still debating that topic to this day.
It's never going to end.
It really won't until the movie just doesn't come out.
And even then, maybe it'll keep going on.
Yeah, we just go back and forth at one another. But, you know, thank you guys who are Star Wars fans and who are asking for more. And again, you know, it's certainly a relevant and hot topic for sure. I know that there was even lots of conversations happening today in the Twitterverse about, you know, should Rian Johnson still get his trilogy?
Yeah, and we've talked about that too, right, in an episode. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think
with Solo coming out, it's going to generate more conversation too, I think, about that movie. That's going to start to become a hot button topic again.
Yeah.
Also, JRB, by the way, Aaron, would like to know how many listeners we're going to lose if you don't go to see Aquaman. And I will tell you right now, Jeremy, Aaron is going to see Aquaman. It is not up for debate. It's going to happen. He's going to see it. So don't worry about it.
Look. So we've got a couple of announcements that we'll tease and talk about at the end of the show. But I'm sure there will be a watch party. I would not miss it. Just because. So
he's going to come in his Aquaman underoos.
You know it. And they're bright orange with green trim.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And the Aquaman logo is right. Anywho.
Okay. We might lose some listeners now.
Oh, boy.
So with Ron Diesel. Ron Diesel asks, with the movie The Predator coming out this weekend, how much longer can the Predator franchise last? And that is a good question, because I still don't know that. I can't believe how long it's lasted already, to be honest with you.
84? No, 86.
Yeah, I saw the first Predator 86. In the movies, in theaters.
Did Aaron take you to see that?
No, I went with... So it is a boring story that nobody really needs to hear, but... Back then, a friend, we were supposed to go to see this like local band play, right? They were playing at one of the schools, and somehow like we all got tickets, but my friend that I was going to go with was like, you know what, those guys aren't really very good. So he's like, his sister and her, I don't even know if it was her husband yet at the time, they took us to go see Predator instead. So that's how I went to see Predator. And yeah, I loved it. And it's, you know, the original Predator is as one of the most testosterone filled movies of all time. But you know, Predator 2 wasn't very good, and the Alien versus Predator movies were not good. And I saw Predators, right, which was the Robert Rodriguez movie, which was okay. Right. So like I've, you know, after that original, I have not been particularly taken by the Predator franchise, so I don't know. And this new one, The Predator, which is a Shane Black movie, who I generally like, I don't know that I have much interest in it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you, although I do like Predator 2. I mean, Gary Busey.
Predator 2's okay. I mean, it's not awful, but it's not, I mean, you know.
No, it's not as good as the first one. Yeah. I actually just rebought the first one, not because it was released in 4K, and I was like, yep, definitely going to get it. Amazing movie. Classic, has certainly aged well. So many good one-liners, too, throughout that film. And then, yeah, I agree. The Alien vs. Predators thing kind of dissolved. Well, yeah, it just kind of dissolved the brand a little bit. It just got real, real crazy, and there were too many damn type of Predators. And I didn't mind Robert Rodriguez's Predators.
It was fine. I mean,
there was some interesting stuff that was happening there. This one feels like an Alien vs. Predators movie to me.
The trailer or the TV spot that I saw kind of caught me off guard, because I was like, wow, that doesn't seem to have a tone or a feel to it at all. Like, it was, there was a lot of comedy, and it was almost like lighthearted. Yeah. It was really weird.
You saw the Red Band one? Is that the...
I guess I did. Well, one of them I saw was a TV, like an actual TV spot, so that wouldn't have been. But yeah, the Red Band was the trailer that I saw, and they were both weird, though.
I didn't like the comedy, man. That's what was killing me. And look, I'm a big fan of Keegan-Michael Key, by the way. You know, formerly of Key and Peele.
Yep.
But I don't know. You know, seeing him in this movie and he's just like laughing like a psychopath, like, I'm not buying it. I don't really buy him as being some ex-military kind of guy. You know what I mean? He's just like a insurance salesman or something. I don't know what it is. That's what's the problem. And I'm not a fan of Olivia Munn.
Really?
So there's, yeah, I'm not. I'm oh, not like
I am a big fan.
Oh, yeah, okay. Like, fine, like eye candy, great, but you know, I'm just not feeling it. And the other Predator thing looks gigantic.
Yeah, there's a lot of, apparently there's a lot of Predators in this too. There's like a rogue Predator that's, I don't know.
Yeah, and now this is getting a black eye.
This is a scandal, and it involves Olivia Munn in a sense where,
yeah.
I mean, it's not her scandal, but apparently Shane Black has multiple times cast a friend of his who is a registered sex offender to have like bit parts in a bunch of these movies, and he has one in The Predator. And when it came out, Olivia Munn specifically was very outspoken about having the scene removed, which it was. But now she's kind of getting some backlash, apparently, and that was what I was reading today. Not backlash from like fans and people, but I guess for people associated with the movie. So there is some controversy with it, and I don't expect it to do great business this weekend.
Yeah,
because I just don't know where. Like, to me, the Predator franchise has never. It's never really broken out. No, it's. I mean, the original movie was it was a Schwarzenegger movie, and he was a big name at the time, and you know, so. But it wasn't like a huge blockbuster either. I mean, it did well by like the standards of like sci-fi, action, horror, whatever genre you put it in. But you know, Predator 2 didn't do big numbers at the box office, and really none of the movies after that really lit up the box office. So it's kind of a niche thing, and I don't. You know, I don't know. But it's gotten more legs, like I said in the beginning. It's gotten more legs than what I thought it would have.
Yeah, yeah. And to answer Ron's second part of that question, I mean, there's just been mixed bag. Some people have had fun with it in terms of some of the reviews that have come out of the – that have been released as part of the Toronto Film Festival, International Film Festival. Some people just don't like it. They say it's a mess. So, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, right now it's at like 45% on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's, you know, it's middling. And Shane Black can be a somewhat polarizing figure because his movies do have humor in them. So, again, there's that conversation about, like, how appropriate is, like, is there such a thing as too much comedy when it's not appropriate, or like how is a proper way to use comedy in the context of some of these movies. He threw some of it into Iron Man 3, movies like, you know, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, have some elements of it. The Other Guys. Yeah. So like it's his thing, you know, very much. It's, but I think this time it seems like there's too much conflict, at least from some of the reviews that I read, where the comedy is too much comedy. It doesn't quite fit. There's apparently a lot of gore, which doesn't necessarily work with the comedy elements, and doesn't seem to have doesn't seem like it has a feel or tone of its own. Although I don't know, like, I mean, I don't know that I expect a Predator movie to have like great reviews, no matter who's directing it. I mean, I don't know that any of them really lit up the critic. I know Predator 2 didn't, and I know the Alien versus Predator movies didn't either. I don't know that, you know, critics fall over themselves for these types of movies anyway, so I wouldn't put too much stock in that, but yeah, it seems to be kind of in the middle, and I guess, you know, some people have, you know, wherever the line has been drawn, I think, like, at the comedy, people either thought it was too much or that it was effective, and that's kind of where the dividing line is.
So it's meh.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Speaking of testosterone, though, you know, Sylvester Stallone keeps teasing that this Rambo 5 is going to be a thing sooner than later. So what do you think?
Pass.
Pass. Okay.
I don't necessarily disagree. Take this character anymore, man. Like, I just don't. I don't get it. Okay, great. He's coming out of retirement for the fifth time. Like, a man of war wants to live a simple life. Great. Gets called back. I mean, it's like the Equalizer. It's like Man on Fire. It's like, you know, how many other movies? You know what I mean? It's like Logan.
It's definitely not going to be like, like Logan, that'd be amazing, but I don't know.
But you know, the whole premise of like reluctant hero.
Yes.
Former hero reluctant to come back and ultimately is dragged back. Fine. As long as there's no aliens.
Oh God, aliens. Yeah, no, that would
You heard, like, I think it was a couple years ago. Yeah, he bought the rights for like some book. And it was like, I forgot what it was exactly, but apparently it was like, oh, what if John Rambo meets his most deadliest foe and like some Martian?
Oh, that sounds awful.
Yeah. But I don't think they're going to do that.
No, I don't think either. But, you know, it's unfortunate because Rambo or John Rambo, depending on, you know,
It's just Rambo.
Well, originally it was going to be John Rambo. And then I think it was in some countries, but then it wound up just being Rambo, causing confusion because there's also Rambo First Blood Part 2. But anyway, the last one. That was, I thought, again, it was a good ending.
Yeah.
You know, like, I thought that was kind of almost like a miracle. Like, they pulled that movie off and it was really effective and perfect for what it needed to be and was a great ending. And I don't know why we just, I mean, he's Sylvester Stallone. I don't know that he necessarily needs the money, but I don't know why we need to go down this road. But I guess Creed kind of emboldened him, you know, and now he feels like he can keep pulling these movies off.
Just leave your franchises alone, man. They're fine. We love them. We don't want to see you prove any point that you're a 70-something-year-old man and, like, you can do all this stuff. That's great. You turn people into paste in the last movie. Fine.
Yeah.
Great. It's like Bruce Willis. Hang up your wife beater.
Well, I was just going to say, we're going to get... So you're a no-go on McClane and you're a no-go on Rambo 5.
Yeah, because, you know, at this point, it gets to... It's like a racer. And the more that you just keep on going at it, it's just going to be scratching the paper off. And it, you know, no one likes that. It's just, it's almost too much. Leave it alone. I know that, you know, people want to tap the well and they want to go back to something that it's familiar and people know and love. But like, let's be creative. I'm not saying that they can't take the character to new creative territories, but at what point is enough enough? Like, you're just diluting the whole brand.
Unless they somehow pull off another miracle, I guess. But
I mean that, but that's the thing. I mean, like that movie, nobody expected it to happen, right? It was like around the time he was doing Rocky Balboa.
Yep. Which was also a miracle.
Was also another one. So he had, you know, he went 2 for 2 and it was great, and then he spun it off into Creed, which is phenomenal.
Although, I mean, Creed is Ryan Coogler's baby. Even though Sylvester Stallone hijacked it with Creed 2, that was Ryan Coogler's baby. It was his idea, basically.
Yeah.
We know he can direct a movie.
But it's brilliant.
Yep.
And it was the natural way to take that story. And it's like, if you do something like that with this new Rambo movie, then it just feels like a knockoff off of Creed. So I just don't know how much, you know, and again, like, when was Rambo released? In 2006? 2008 maybe? I'm sure it's
2008.
Yep. So 10 years ago. You gonna do it again? You know what I mean? Like, oh man.
No. Yeah, I mean, what are the chances that you're gonna nail it?
You're gonna do it again? Yeah, I don't think so, because like the Expendable movies, for what they were, they were fine, but they weren't like.
Well, that was a different. I mean, people didn't expect those movies to be like serious. I mean, that was an event type of thing. You know, that was like, let's go and watch these fun movies with all these characters. These
older dudes.
You know, the plot didn't matter, really. And they were, you know, it was really very much that kind of molded in the 80s.
Guys shooting guns, blowing stuff up.
Yeah. Aside from Rambo 3, which got cartoony, like the Rambo series for the most part, I mean, like First Blood and this last Rambo, they were gritty films. And, you know, Rambo 2... very 80s, obviously, very patriotic and all that stuff, but it's still, you know, it's got its grit to it. Rambo 3, like I said, got cartoony, kind of like Rocky 4 got cartoony in the Rocky series, but yeah, I mean, so it's different from the Expendables. I think with a Rambo movie, as much as we think of, like, guns and muscles and stuff, like, Rambo, the series has been more than that, though. And I don't. That's why I think it's going to be hard for them to kind of, you know, really knock this out of the park. Pull off a second miracle in 10 years, maybe. I don't know.
Well, God bless them. Yes. Go for it. Maybe it's good enough. I'll see it.
So yeah, well, we'll see. We do know though you're going to see Aquaman. So as long as we get that settled.
Yeah. JRB won't have it if I don't.
Yeah. And speaking of a watch party, so we got some announcements. We've already mentioned last week that we will be at New York Comic Con. So the Friday, October 5th, we are both going to be there at Comic Con. We will be there recording some segments for the episode, for the show. We will also have some merch with us, some t-shirts and stickers, giving them out to people. So if you do plan on going to New York Comic Con and you're one of our listeners, you know, shoot us a DM. Let us know you're going to be there. Maybe we can meet up. And also, we're still working out some details, but we can announce that we will be taking part in the Revenge of the Fans Halloween Watch Party, which will be October 27th. So it's the week after the movie opens. We will be getting together with the Revenge of the Fans crew and, you know, readers / listeners to watch Halloween at a theater and time to be determined still. And then there is going to be a very special after party with details forthcoming that I think people should be very excited about for that night. So I think that's a Saturday night, October 27th. We will be there. And for the first time, we'll be at one of these watch parties as the hosts of the Fanboy Garage.
Yeah.
So that'll be kind of exciting. And so, you know, join us for that if you're in the New York area. And be on the lookout for the Revenge of the Fans Twitter page and our Twitter as well. And also the Revengers podcast will be, you know, giving you all of the details once everything's finalized and determined. But we just wanted to let you know that that's in the works. And we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah. Should be a good time. I mean, I'm really looking forward to Comic-Con. It's going to be awesome. So be on the lookout for that. And, of course, then there's Halloween. Ooh-hoo. Man, that's going to be good.
Yeah, that trailer, that new trailer came out and kind of knocked socks off.
Yeah, just knocked everyone's socks off.
Yeah, we'll be...
And people are they're reacting to it. There's been some pre-screenings and... It's sounding pretty good.
Yeah, it does. It sounds pretty good, and you know, hopefully it is. And I have a feeling it's going to be this thing's going to make money. I think it's pretty amazing. The buzz has been pretty phenomenal for this movie.
And I mean, the timing is great.
Yes, right? Timing's great. Horror is hot the last couple of years. So yeah, I think it's kind of like a perfect storm. I'm not expecting like It type numbers because that was just insanity, but yeah, I think it's going to do really well.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yes, and we'll be contributing to that total. So let's do some plugs.
Sure. Okay, so you know, if you guys want to continue any conversations, if you have any other questions, topics you'd like us to cover, You can reach out to me directly on Twitter at StartingSith.
And you can reach me at RealCAlmighty.
And you can always get at both of us on Twitter at The Fanboy Garage. And please be sure to stop by TheFanboyGarage.com, where you can listen to previous episodes, learn more about me and Chris, and pick up the hottest gear at our merchandise store, as well as buy anything that you'd like to buy on Amazon.com through our affiliate link. So click that. If you are interested in buying books, you want to buy Pampers, if you want to buy strobe lights, anything that makes your heart go pitter-patter, please do it.
Books, click Pampers, and strobe lights. That sounds like a really night kinky right
party, right?
Yeah.
All we're missing is the KY. Boots, 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 boots. No? All right, Chris is not with me on that one.
And there go more listeners.
Yeah, so, yeah. Do all of that, and don't buy any of that stuff. I meant like it. Click the link, buy the merch, listen to episodes, tell your friends about us. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review. We've gotten a couple new ones in so far. No one that's actually left comments, but we still appreciate those that have dropped the 5 stars. And, you know, really appreciate you guys coming in week by week, listening to our crazy antics and our, you know, sort of opinions on things that are happening. And to those that are new, welcome. Glad you're able to make it and join us. And we hope to continue to give you guys more content every week.
And feel free to, you know, if you have questions or feedback on anything, after you're done listening to the episode, feel free to just tweet at us. You know, you don't necessarily have to wait for us to put up a post asking for questions. You could just ask away. And we'll put it all together and be able to talk about it on the show. So definitely keep going with the conversation. We love the debates and the dialogue that we've been interacting with you guys on over the last few weeks. And we'd like to do more of that. So hopefully we can keep growing the community. And we'll talk to you next time.
Later, guys.